This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the renowned website builder that helps you share your story with the world in the most beautiful way. Establish a personal brand, portfolio, or e-commerce store at squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Alex Krotowski, and this week we're looking at the new creativity. Apps and solutions that bring out our inner muse, like the one that I'm using right now, walking into the offices of The Guardian to go up to the studio. Plus, we're taking a close look at the issues raised by digital sharing. Hey guys, can I grab my pass? I'm just going upstairs to the studio. Oh, thank you very much. Right, let's go record the podcast. We're getting the dirty from The Guardian's apps correspondent, Stuart Dredge. Plus, we'll be speaking with Dr. Rebecca Ross, communication design course leader at Central St. Martin's, about how the next generation of creatives are learning with technology. We'll also be hearing from one of the most popular creative minds of the digital generation, who has hundreds of thousands of followers and awards from some of the most well-respected institutions in the world, New York Vine artist Albert Burney, otherwise known as Simply Silvio. His zany 6-second videos like this one.
It's an elephant. Wait, it's a deer. No, it's a gorilla.
Won him a comedy award at last year's Tribeca Film Festival. This internet thing, it's just a fad, right? Keep listening to Tech Weekly from The Guardian. More from Albert or Silvio, or however that relationship manifests itself in just a moment. But first of all, using apps on our tablets or smartphones is often seen as a pretty passive task. But Stuart, you wrote a really comprehensive list of the best apps. I think it was the 50 best apps to get creative with this last weekend in The Observer. Stuart, is software like this opening up a world of creativity to your average Joe, or is this still really a place for the professionals?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, one of the things I really wanted to get to in this piece was this idea of, I think a lot of us nowadays think we're not creative, and it's because we don't have the technical skills to do something, or we don't have access to the tools. So music or painting or animating, all these things, we think we can't do them. But actually, what I like about some of these apps is they're giving you access to the experience of creating, the experience of making the sound, the experience of making a photo. And what you often get, what we got here, was grumpy people saying, well, just because you've got a photography app doesn't make you a photographer, which is true, but it kind of gives you that experience of making a picture and making it look nice and the kind of the experience of doing it. And that's why I think apps, they're not going to make you into the next kind of Picasso or next Damon or whatever, but they can give you a sense of how much fun it is creating stuff.
I like how you raise this idea of grumpy people, because, you know, obviously there are a few of them on the internet, but I do think they have a little bit of a point, don't they? Because it must be very difficult for the developers of these apps. I mean, they can't assume any kind of expertise, can they? They can't expect that anybody will have any proficiency in the creative outlet, can they? So how do they manage to get the right balance, Stuart?
Well, that's it. I think you do have a division here of apps that are made for professionals, where they rely on knowledge, experience, and some kind of. But a lot of them are relying on the fact that you know how to use apps, you know how to use a touchscreen, and you know some of the standards that are coming through in user interfaces. So if you are happy kind of sliding your fingers around playing a game, then something like a kind of techno music creator, where you're doing a similar thing, but that's creating beats and loops. I think it's quite a fascinating design challenge to make these things that a novice can use, but that makes something that sounds really good. So a good example is Figure, which is that music app, where you are just kind of wiggling your fingers around on the screen and seeing what sound it makes and experimenting a bit more. And it's almost like a play toy, but you're making something that sounds good, because they're doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes to help you, to help it stay in time and so on. So I think it's a challenge to get you, I think, to kind of overcome your lack of knowledge, but also to overcome the kind of the assumed knowledge of a lot of the professional instruments you would get.
Rebecca, looking at the sort of user interfaces of many of the technologies that we use nowadays, we don't have to get down and dirty. We don't need to know how to change the f-stop or do anything like that. And so in some ways, these do help to kind of eradicate the messiness, the dirtiness, say, of the dark room, or, you know, getting your fingers mucky with carbon paper or whatever it is. It allows you the kind of gestalt of understanding, the knowing how to create. But does that actually put somebody in good stead for actual creation?
It's quite an interesting question, because I think that this sort of boundary between professional and non-professional is a question that's kind of raised by this new kind of production that we have. I think that people, through making things with apps, become more nuanced and critical consumers of media when they get involved in production. And I think that's exciting. But I think it does raise some questions about what the future is of what it means to be a kind of professional creative. And I think that what was mentioned before was the sort of feeling of fun and agency. I think that can be a seed on the road to somebody becoming a professional creative that could be really important, and it could be accessed in this really easy way. But I think that being a professional creative these days is, you know, whether we use that word, how we use that word, it's a complicated word, professional. But these days, it's less about having a very specified technical skill set. And I think it's challenging the creative industries and the creative professions to kind of rethink what they are, and that they are more porous than ever before in a really healthy way. And so I don't know that we need to kind of spend time sorting out whether something's a sort of professional tool or not a professional tool, because there are kind of lots of different opportunities to be creative. And I think that kind of a new thing that maybe does require a less kind of casual skill level that is happening is that in my field, in communication design, graphic design, creative uses of technology, increasingly the professionals are actually turning their attention to the design of the apps. So it's not just, there's sort of this, you know, the consumer becomes producer and has a more sophisticated relationship to media. But then at the same time, the professional then has this kind of is working at this meta level and maybe kind of saying, well, can we design new tools that people can use in different ways? So the boundary kind of is moving continuously.
Albert, tell me a little bit about your sort of media creation experience before you discovered Vine. Did Vine sort of become your muse? Is it something that you just felt was a really sort of frictionless, seamless way to get into this creation? Or were you already playing around with this video format already?
Yeah, Vine kind of came along at a time when I was getting burnt out on some other video making adventures. I had been making music videos for almost 10 years at that point. And, you know, I'd spend like a month or two on each video, and they just were really time intensive. And then I actually spent 3 years making a feature film with my friends that we shot on 16mm. And we kind of, you know, it was this labor of love, and we had no budget. And it was just kind of this beautiful, timeless experience. But at the end of it, after 3.5 years of working on it, I was kind of burnt out on that and shooting on film. And then Vine came along. And what I loved about it was, you know, you'd get an idea, you'd get some costumes together with your friends, you'd go out, you'd shoot it, and then you'd put it up and you'd be done with it. And it would be, you know, instantly available to be viewed around the world. Where, you know, with the film, we had, you know, sent it to festivals and had a little festival run. But after that, it was kind of hard for it to find a life.
Is that a difference between the professional and the amateur? The notion of rapid iteration, of prototyping, of quickly throwing something up and then having everybody see it, versus, you know, the slow and careful craft of the auteur and then sending it out and having it be collectively accepted by, you know, the Academy, et cetera, et cetera. There's features there that kind of cross over between this notion of expert and amateur. And Rebecca, before you dive in, Albert, is there anything there that you can feel in terms of the way that you created the pieces before and the ways and the attitudes that you have to Simply Silvio?
Definitely. You know, I think, like I said, it was really refreshing to just kind of move very fast and get an idea and make it. And it reminded me a lot of actually how I, when I first started making videos with my brothers when I was, you know, 12, using my dad's camcorder, how you didn't put a lot of thought into it. And it was kind of this freeing thing, and you get ideas, and you wouldn't kind of censor yourself, or you wouldn't think too hard on anything, which sometimes, you know, after working on a project for 3 years, you kind of get stuck in your head a little bit. And it's really refreshing to have that kind of instant explosion of thought and image together. But I, you know, now after having done it for over 2 years, I think I'm getting pulled back to the, you know, the longer format and developing Silvio back into a feature film now. So I think it's kind of a balance. Like, I really love kind of that instant thing that happens on Vine, but after a while, I think it's important to maybe, you know, spend a little bit more time with your creative thoughts and let them grow and become, you know, something that's a little bit deeper or more profound.
Rebecca, does this sort of resonate with this idea of a stopgap?
Well, I think it's quite interesting because obviously you were or are a professional. You worked on a feature-length film before you got involved with Vine. And I actually think that I see Vine as more of a kind of way of, it's a positioning. So it's a vernacular, and you've decided to sort of step away from this kind of long form, long production time medium into a medium where you can produce really quickly and your work is going to be seen in the context of work made by a lot of other people that's produced quickly. And actually that probably all of the experience that you had making a feature film allows your work to stand out. With regard to the comment about looking for some more depth at a certain point, I think that a creative person, whether they're a creative person for money or just a creative person for themselves, and ideally we have some of both, should be kind of on that kind of journey throughout their lives. When students are stuck, I always recommend that they start using Vine for a while, because I think it's a really nice way to just jump back in an unfussy way without worrying too much and without kind of a burdensome production process. And it's a nice place to discover new things. And it's as valid as a way of working or sketching with video as anything else. But then when it feels right for them to kind of move on to something else, they can do something that involves kind of more production and more of a process.
Stuart, I want to bring you back in here because we've spoken a lot about one particular app, Vine, but there are others, and perhaps you can tell us a little about others that cross the streams, perhaps, of video and photography or video and music, you know, some of the things that you mentioned, playwrights, etc., are using.
Yeah, I mean, it's a mixture of things, really. So a good example of an app is an app called Brushes, which is a watercolor sort of painting app, which you have professional painters using. And in a weird way, you often get... Who was it? I think it was maybe David Hockney or someone was using it. He was using it. And the press all around this was, oh, you've got apps that you can make professional watercolours on now. And it was all about the app and the technology, not about this painter will use whatever he's put in his hands and he'll make something interesting. Like, in a way that the press often focuses on the technology rather than the creativity and the creator. So you've got those kind of apps, but those are apps that are being used by people just to sketch and scribble, but they're also being used by people at the top of their profession kind of doing stuff. What else? There's a really interesting app. I found a couple of interesting apps. One's called Haiku Jam, one's called Fold Pass, and they're about collaborative writing, with the idea of people writing poetry and stories and haikus together, where you write a line, then pass it on, which is kind of that old party game of write a line in a story down, then fold it and give it to the next person. And people are experimenting with that, like how can apps become collaborative where it might be a professional writer passing something on to someone sitting in their room at home and you don't know. So they're quite interesting. The apps that are kind of not just saying you can be pro or amateur, but saying actually you can co-create and you can be different levels of skill.
When any new creative medium is introduced, there does come a change in the way that artists approach their work. We've been talking about this with regards to Vine. Rebecca, you mentioned, you know, the kind of quick and dirty dive in, just don't think about it, don't get too deep about it idea. But also give birth to new aesthetics and to new styles, which Albert, certainly we see in Simply Silvio. Apps are obviously no different, with the creative process being constantly reimagined. And Albert, I wanted to ask, who are your influences? Do you take influence from older pre-app media, or are you really forging ahead using all of the kind of the digital sensibilities into an unknown territory?
I definitely draw a lot of my inspiration from before apps. The filmmakers, you know, Stanley Kubrick and Buster Keaton and French New Wave, David Lynch, all of those guys, you know, continue to inspire me. And, you know, anytime I'm feeling any kind of creative law, all I have to do is, you know, turn on one of their films and I'm touched by that spirit that is so powerful in their work. And a lot of music, too, I find inspiration from, like, the older, you know, Bob Dylan or Neil Young, that kind of stuff. So yeah, but then, you know, it with Vine was so exciting, especially when it first came out, is that everyone, you know, had the same tools in the beginning. It was so simple. You just press on the screen and record video, So I was definitely inspired by a lot of stuff I saw on Vine, just seeing what people could do, really artistic, creative stuff. You know, when I first started Vine, the first month I was just shooting footage of my friends or whatever I was doing the day. And then I started to see that there was this whole creative community. So I'm definitely inspired by what people are doing on the online, on apps. I think it's kind of a mixture of both those, old and new.
Rebecca, do you see something as different about the app aesthetic, the way that people are using apps to be creative? Or is this a reinvention of something that already exists?
Well, when I teach digital media at design school, the first thing I say to students is I always give them an experience with coding. And the reason I always give them some experience with coding, whether they like it and want to do more of it, or whether they just have this one-off experience, it's kind of like you're a better driver of a car if you've looked at the engine and understand a little bit about how it works. But I also feel really strongly about trying to destabilize the off-the-shelf software market. And I think that, you know, for years I've seen artists and designers sort of using computers, you know, have the kind of scope of what they're able to do kind of kept at bay a little bit by software. And so what I really kind of welcome is the way that the apps market is completely destabilizing that the kind of big established off-the-shelf software products. There is, however, you know, most of the apps I think that we're talking about today, they do have an aesthetic, and Instagram's the most obvious one that has an aesthetic, but they do have, many of them do have specific aesthetics associated with them, and possibly the most interesting uses of those apps are where people are really familiar with that aesthetic in depth and like do something new with it, and they surprise us with it because it seems so narrow, 7 seconds in this, you know, very small kind of tool that doing something new can be very surprising in that narrow environment. But what I kind of really hope is that people use these tools not as just kind of turning production into consumption, but that actually that they're kind of finding new tools all the time and trying new tools all the time and wanting new tools all the time.
What do you mean by turning production into consumption?
Well, there's always a risk with, you know, if someone opens one of these apps and just kind of makes something quickly and it looks generically according to all the stuff that app makes, kind of takes on that aesthetic of that app, that they're kind of basically, they're laboring in a way, they're kind of contributing their time, and they in effect kind of become a laborer on behalf of the software company in certain ways. But I guess I'm really excited about all the fluidity and all the change and people trying all sorts of new tools all the time and wanting new tools. I want people to use these tools critically and not let these tools narrow what's kind of creatively possible.
Stuart, you mentioned apps which introduce a new format. So an example is Front Back, the camera tool that captures the photographer in the shot as well. So do you see that there is a new aesthetic, that there's a new opportunity for creativity that has been made available through the technology? Or here's your either or are we getting towards peak app? So we're just introducing new medium for the sake of it.
Oh, goodness, that's a good question. I mean, I agree with Rebecca there that there is this thing of, is it your aesthetic or is it the app's aesthetic? So Front Back, showing the photographer, that's kind of Front Back thing. It's not your personal expression of creativity necessarily. Another app I wrote about was called Dub Smash, which is where you basically lip sync along to famous movie lines or famous song lines and then share them on social networks. And there, again, you're just kind of, you're lip syncing to something. But the creativity comes in how people do it. And people are being amazing. They're dressing up. They're kind of going into strange places to do these things. They're stretching this new app and this new medium as far as it can go. But one thing I did want to tell you was thinking about coding. I think that's something very interesting here. Because some of the apps we wrote about were for kids. And this idea of kids learning to code through apps like Tinker and a bunch of other ones. And here in the UK now, I think you're going to be using these kinds of apps and using services like Scratch, where you create stories through kind of coding-like processes from the age of kind of 7, 8 years old, which makes me think in 10 years' time, in sort of 15 years' time, people who are making art, people who are making music, they'll have grown up thinking of, they've grown up doing coding, but also grown up thinking of coding as a creative process. So in a way, I think that the long-term potential here is really great because you, as an artist, you won't have to be held back by coding is something I can't do. I can't create this stuff electronically. So some of this is going to create new expressions in the future when you have a musician who's grown up coding, brings that into their music and how they present their music. So I think in a way, a lot of this stuff is quite simple. We're going to see a lot of new ideas and expressions coming in 10, 15 years' time.
Albert, I'm going to pick this up with you in just a second, but now a word from our sponsor.
This new year, make a resolution to dust off that big idea. This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the powerful platform that gives you simple tools to create a gorgeous website in minutes. With elegant templates, Getty image integration, and marketing tools, you can make your ideas resonate with the world. Try it at squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Now, of course, while we all may like to send a vine and create things in the moving image, it'd feel a bit like we're Wes Anderson. These apps aren't only being used for fun. YouTube stars like Zoella, with her millions of followers, are proof that we have a new launch pad for stardom. Albert, you've collaborated with other Vine artists for the creation of Simply Silvio. And we were speaking just before the break there about this idea of social networks and reaching out. Are platforms like Vine becoming a viable way for artists to support themselves?
Indeed they are. I've been able to, with Vine and with my friends on Vine, make a living this past year, which still is kind of weird to say because I can't believe it. And I keep wondering if it's going to last or if it's this kind of little bubble here as, you know, advertisers and brands are scrambling to kind of figure out what Vine and these new apps are, or if it's, you know, just the way of the future. And, you know, that's where all of the children and the viewers are. So they want to get to those eyes and influence them.
It is extraordinary that the number of conversations that I have with people who aren't part of the app, the Vine, the YouTube consuming community are astonished when I say things like, oh yeah, there's a guy, he makes films in which he is a character called Simply Silvio and he's got 277,000 followers, or Zoella has X million followers, PewDiePie plays games and he's got 35 million followers. They're always astonished that there is such an enormous audience, because they are very much stuck in some ways in a kind of traditional media format. Do you feel, Albert, that because of this conception that it is something other, that people aren't paying attention, that there are barriers to your work, to the expression within sort of traditional forms? Or are you perfectly happy just reaching out to your 277,000 people and, you know, forget the rest of them?
Right. No, I think there is a barrier. I'm 33, and a lot of my friends who are around my age, when I tell them about Vine, they say, oh yeah, you know, I think I downloaded that when it first came out, but I haven't opened it in 2 years. Or, you know, I went on there and I couldn't stand, it was just a bunch of kids, you know, kind of yelling into their cameras. So I think, you know, I always try to tell them that there is this creative community on there of animators and people doing really cool stuff that I know that they would enjoy, but you kind of have to dig through some of the thousands of accounts that are not as inspired, you know, kind of people, as we were talking about earlier, who are just kind of doing the most, you know, basic thing on there of screaming into their phone after school or something. and I think that's part of why lately, you know, I'm excited to maybe move back into longer form stuff, is just to find that older audience or less of a stigma kind of around, you know, I think there is a stigma for some people to say like, oh, it's just an app on a phone. I, you know, there's not art on there. There's nothing profound or deep going on, you know, in 6.5 seconds.
Well, Rebecca, you with your students, you bring these tools into the classroom. Do you feel that you are preparing students for creative job market, or is this a stepping stone for longer formats? Where do you feel that it fits within the creative marketplace?
Like I said before, I think we have like an erosion of the kind of traditional tools of the creative industries, and that's good. And so I feel like everything's sort of level right now in a really nice way. My students are really flexible generally. They will use apps, they'll use kind of big Adobe software, they'll use whatever's at hand that kind of works according to whatever their communication goals are. And so I actually think that sometimes it's about where the audience is. So sometimes you do want to reach the audience that's looking at social media or looking at particular type of form. And sometimes you want to reach a different kind of audience, as Albert's identifying. So I actually would want them to be really savvy and intentional and in control over what they want to say and who they want to say it to and what the best way and the most interesting way is of saying it.
And Albert, as you mentioned, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff out there that, you know, is people screaming into their phones or whatever. So, Rebecca, if we're dealing now with a different kind of economy, you know, it's a creative economy still, but it's more of an attention economy, mm-hmm. flooded with this extraordinary creativity and perhaps less creativity, more sort of expressions of self, perhaps. How much are you focusing on this attention economy with your students?
We generally frame how you pay your rent and pay for your food after you finish university as a design problem itself. And so I actually think that young people are graduating now with a lot of questions about how they're going to make a living. And we really respect the fact that they have to ask those questions and engage with them, and that actually the conventional sort of recipes are don't really apply in the same way as they once did. And actually all kind of the old-fashioned design studio model, the ad agency model, models like that aren't even working that well particularly, and are asking a lot of questions of themselves as well. And so, you know, it's not sort of like the more attention you get, the better. That's not really, I mean, it certainly, everybody knows that if you have the right kind of attention from the right kind of audience, it's going to help you position yourself in a way that's going to help how much you're able to earn. But we want them to bring something else to that formulation. And if they are able to find a way to achieve something that's important to them in relation to changes in media, as well as pay their bills and have a livelihood, that's a hard thing to do. And some of these platforms and tools can really help them do that.
That is, I'm afraid, all the time we have for this week on our podcast. But if you want to keep following or get involved with our conversation about apps and everything else in the world of technology, then go to theguardian.com/technology. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, many thanks to our guests, Stuart Dredge down the line, Rebecca Ross in the studio, and Albert Burney, a.k.a. Simply Silvio, also down the line. For me, Alex Kratosky, producer Eva Krisiak, our head of audio, Jason Phipps, and all the tech team, thank you for listening.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.